Most artists do hope that their work will someday be recognized by the public, admired by critics, maybe even remembered by historians. Even 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Ouch. Word of mouth regular Clay Wirestone compiled a list of history's most well-known but worst-received artist for the July-August issue of Mental Floss magazine. He's here to run through some memorable creative fails. I don't know if I can thank you for this, Clay.
Oh, well.
Great to have you here, though.
Oh, good to be here, too.
Who are we listening to?
That's Florence Foster Jenkins, also known as the Diva of Din, as her fans called her. She wanted to be a musician from an early age, but her father really opposed that, so she wasn't able to pursue her musical education until after his death, when she was 44 years old, at which point she began a series of yearly recitals to a society audience, mainly performing kind of operatic standards like that.
Okay, so we heard that recording. Is this the first recorded example of audiences loving something purely for camp value?
Well, certainly one of the first times somebody got so famous for doing that. She put on these recitals for some 30 years, and they became legendary. She had to turn people away. You know, she made her own costumes, some of which involved angel wings, And eventually the demand grew so great that she made records like what we just heard, and she actually played Carnegie Hall at the age of 76, made a tidy amount of money, and they had to turn some 2,000 people away.
Whoa. So next on your list, the dedicated and persistent Scottish poet William Topaz McGonagall. What's his story?
Well, he was a weaver, but he had the unfortunate he was unfortunately born at the wrong place at the wrong time, which was that the Industrial Revolution was kind of sweeping through Europe at the time. His skills were becoming obsolete, and he had a wife and 7 children to support. So he had a divine revelation at the age of 47 in 1877 that he was supposed to write poetry.
Uh-huh.
And so he just, he had no training for this. He just started writing poems about current events, people he knew, just random subjects, and sending them to newspapers. And many times they were printed, perhaps just so people could laugh at them.
Well, we do have a bit of his best known work here. This is called The Tay Bridge Disaster. May I read just some?
Oh, please, go ahead.
Beautiful railway bridge of the silvery Tay, alas, I'm very sorry to say that 90 lives have been taken away on the last Sabbath day of 1879, which will be remembered for a very long time. Not exactly Robert Burns.
No, not at all. And, of course, you can't forget the very last lines of the poem, for the stronger we our houses do build, the less chance we have of being killed. It's hard to argue with that, really.
So how did people respond?
Let's put it this way. He became well-known enough that circuses that were passing through Dundee would hire him to recite his poems in front of crowds, and then the crowds would throw things at him.
Regardless of whether you like the poetry, you have to admire this guy had unflagging belief in his own work. Now, is this what inspires a cult following, Clay?
Well, absolutely. And he had friends and supporters who helped him publish a collection of his work called Poetical Gems, and it's actually still in print now. And J.K. Rowling, actually, the Harry Potter author, the headmistress of Hogwarts Academy, Minerva McGonagall, is actually named after
William
McGonagall.
He does indeed have a legacy, even if he's not getting any royalties.
No.
So next we have a Russian sculptor whose name I'm not going to attempt to pronounce.
Well, my attempt is Zurab Tsereteli. But he's a Russian sculptor with a real flair for the tacky. He came up through the old Soviet system, but has managed to cling to power and prominence. His best-known work is a 10-story-tall statue of Peter the Great, the founder of the Russian Empire in Moscow. But for some reason, Peter is wearing Roman legionnaire garb and is standing on a ship that's on top of a tower-shaped wave. People, artists and critics in Moscow hate it so much that they've actually threatened to blow it up at various times.
Whoa. And well, now he added some influential friends, however, among them President Bill Clinton, who mm-hmm. spoke at the unveiling of the 9/11 memorial that currently stands in Bayonne, New Jersey. Now, this is something that Tseretelli designed. Would you like to describe it for
us? Well, it's called To the Struggle Against World Terrorism, and it's a giant slab of stone that there's a kind of a huge crack in the middle of it. It looks maybe like it's been blown up somehow. And there's this giant metallic tear that for some reason is hanging in the middle of the crack. And there's water that pours down around it 24/7. It was originally meant for Jersey City, New Jersey, and it was going to be installed for free. And everyone there was very excited until they actually saw it. At which point, then they politely rejected it, and it went to another city.
That's so strange. Well, there's a link to a slideshow of his works if you disbelieve Clay's description of how bad it is. Now, finally, Clay, you discovered a fantasy novella, The Eye of Argon, that's become kind of a cult classic among genre fans for its utter ineptitude. Give us a little bit about the author.
Well, what it's mainly important to know about the author is that he was young. Jim Thies wrote this story when he was 16 years old. It was published in something called OSFAN, the Ozark Science Fiction Society's fan magazine. Probably something that was mimeographed. It had some hand-drawn illustrations to it. And, you know, I doubt he thought that anything would happen with it. But what eventually occurred was that this magazine made its way into the nascent science fiction convention circuit in the 1970s, where people just could not believe this ripely overwritten prose. It became kind of a hit.
Can you give us an example?
Yes. Well... Well, here's just a sentence that's chosen at random. The flickering torches cast weird shafts of luminescence dancing over the half-naked harlot of his choice, her stringy orchid twines of hair swaying gracefully over the lithe opaque nose as she raised a half-drained mug to her pale red lips.
He sounds like he's more 12 than 16.
Well, and it was turned into, in the science fiction conventions, into kind of a contest. Basically, whoever won was the person who could read the story for the longest without breaking into hysterical laughter.
Well, I think you did a pretty good job. Is this story still popular among fantasy fans today?
Well,
I mean, this was back in the
70s. I don't know if I'd say popular was quite the word, but it certainly has survived. Jim Thies, unfortunately, died in 2002. He never quite came to terms with what happened to the story. He learned about it. He'd become a journalist in the interim, and I think was a little ashamed. But after his death in 2006, it was actually finally published in a paperback edition with his name misspelled on the cover.
I'm just wondering, is the message to bad artists, just keep trying. Maybe someday you'll find your audience.
I think the real message is you have to believe that you're great. All of these people, well, possibly with the exception of Jim, actually believed that they were amazing, that they were awesome. William McGonagall believed that Queen Victoria wanted him to become her official poet.
Didn't happen.
Unfortunately not.
Well, thanks so much for telling us about these epic fails.
Sure.
Clay Wirestone, he's arts editor at the Concord Monitor, and his article, The Worst at What They Do, is in the new edition of Mental Floss magazine. We do have links to some of that terrible sculpture, videos, and slideshows of everything we mentioned at wordofmouthradio.org.